From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 10th day of September, 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson, the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt, and the weather forecast with Don Day. We'll also hear from the state statisticians and get updates from their regions. Here the way the numbers settled up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. September corn on the day up 7¾ cents. It settled at $3.48 and a half. December $3.61 and a half, up 7¼. And March futures up 7¼ at $3.74 and a half. The July $3.90 and three quarters, 6½ cents higher. September beans 14¼ higher at $8.59 and a quarter. November at $8.72, up 14¼. And January futures 13¾ higher at $8.85 and three quarters. Next year's July at $9.20 and three quarters, 12¼ higher. And November beans of 20 at $9.34 and three quarters, up 9¼ cents. The bean oil 12 cents higher. The bean meal up $4.40. Soft red winter wheat a dime higher at $4.84 and a half. Live cattle futures in Chicago, October up $1.95 for the dime, $96.15. Feeder cattle at $133.90. The settlement price there, $1.07 and a half cents higher, and the lean hogs at $62.72 and a half cents, up 12½ cents. Let's turn our attention to what really happened in Chicago. Wayne Nelson is here. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In mid-morning, the president tweeted out that he had let go Mr. Bolton, and I think that had an impact on the market, but it appears there was a whole lot going on overnight and through the day, including a rumor about China. Can you give me your view of the marketplace?
Well, there was a flash announcement early this morning that Mexico had another big sale. That was one of the things, or we made another big sale to Mexico. We were playing the overnight on the drop in the crop ratings. And then the South China Morning Post come out and made the comment that China is expected to make more U.S. ag product purchases as a goodwill gesture ahead of the October talks. So that, and then, of course, Bolton had been known to be a hawk against China, wanting to be very, very Americans. And it said that President Trump didn't like some of his recommendations. And that sounds more friendly to trying to make a deal rather than let's not make a deal. So I think all of those put together, along with some of the crop yields that we're hearing out of different places, not quite coming up to what they want to be, give us a rally.
So tonight I will be traveling back to Belleville. I came through there over the weekend, about 25 miles north of St. Louis, Belleville area. I saw one field that had been harvested in Illinois. What have you been hearing about yields?
Well, you know, there was some yields over by Covington. 575 acres of corn on sandy ground made 94 bushels the acre at 21%. And last year, that same field made 190. So that wasn't very good for that one. Close. A field south of Indianapolis made 140 bushel, was 240 last year. But then again, we've talked to people in Kentucky, the best crop they've ever had, and it's up around 220 to 240. And down in the Arkansas area, what we've heard of so far down there has been about the same as last year. I think it was 160 on some of the ground that are down there. They've made 158 last year. So about the same in the Mid-South. But as we go into areas of Illinois, areas of Indiana, and on a very limited basis, you have to remember this is not a great percentage of people talking about what's going on yet. So most of the combines are still sitting in the barnyard.
Are there expectations that there will be follow-through from today's upward movement in corn and soybeans?
I think it's going to depend a lot on how the funds look at some of this and try to look ahead to Thursday's report. Will they think that, you know, all of this probably won't be incorporated in the report's numbers? So it's going to be interesting to see if the funds do continue to buy back some of their shorts come tomorrow.
All right. So what else are we looking at this point? So yeah, the USDA reports on Thursday, both the crop production and the WASD figure at the end of the month. They'll roll those numbers forward and put them into the last grain stocks figures of the year as well.
Yeah. And, you know, the average guesses as far as the production or the per acre on corn is basically 2 bushels less than what the government said last month. The FSA office has come forward and said, you know, there was more acres planted to corn after failed or after prevent plant. But that won't be incorporated this time, but it would be a thought that in the future we'd have to lower the harvest acres for grain on that. So that's a couple of things looking at. But all in all, there's a very wide variation of some of the people trying to guess what the numbers are going to be on the report on Thursday. And it's a wide variation. And, you know, just looking at things, the NASS was supposed to do a field survey for this. How are they going to handle the crop that's not mature enough to actually take ear weights and do it? Are they just going to count population in ears and count that it's going to make it? Or are they going to take a percent back that's maybe way late? You know, beans that aren't blooming or beans that aren't setting pods, corn that hasn't, you know, finished, you know, setting the ear or heavy enough to tell how good it is. So that's one of the big things. It's a big question mark come Thursday.
Well, we'll find out more then. Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with L&M Commodities. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 89% of the corn crop around the nation has entered the dough stage. 97% is the rolling five-year average. 55% of the crop has dented. 77% is the five-year average. And 11% of the corn crop has reached maturity. 24% is the rolling five-year average. 45% is in good condition. 10% in excellent, for a total of 55% in those two categories. In the previous week, the total was 58%, so down 3 percentage points. For soybeans, 92% of the crop has set pods now, and it is considered to be in 45% good and 10% excellent condition. That's a slight change from last week when it was in 46% good and 9% excellent condition. Here are some of the other numbers. I'll pick up a couple of states we don't report on all of the time. From Nebraska, the number 3 corn-producing state in the nation, and the one most people believe to be in the best condition this year. The crop is said to be 70% dented now. That's behind the 84% last year and 81% average, with 58% of the crop in good condition and 15% in excellent condition. On the other side of the Corn Belt, Ohio is expected to be one of the worst corn-producing states in the nation this year because of the weather throughout the growing season. They're still not completely silked at 95%. The five-year average, of course, is 100%. 75% of that crop has reached the dough stage. Up 29% has dented, and it's normally 68% dent at this point in time. And the condition of the crop is just 30% good and 3% excellent. Now, here are the updates from Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota.
This is Brad Medlock, agricultural statistician for the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, with the weekly Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report. Most of Iowa experienced cooler than normal temperatures and below normal precipitation during the weekend in September 8, 2019. Statewide, there were 5.7 days suitable for fieldwork. Fieldwork activities included harvesting hay and seed corn, chopping corn silage, seeding cover crops, and preparing machinery for corn for grain and soybean harvest. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 5% very short, 26% short, 68% adequate, and 1% surplus. Areas in 28 counties were rated as D1 moderate drought according to the September 3rd, 2019 U.S. Drought Monitor due to persistent lack of rain in parts of Iowa.
Just for a very quick clarification purpose here, that's 28 counties that are abnormally dry or in D1 moderate drought.
91% of the corn crop was in or beyond the dough stage, 2 weeks behind last year and 12 days behind the five-year average. 60% of the crop reached the dented stage, 2 weeks behind last year and 9 days behind average. 4% of corn had reached maturity, 11 days behind average. Corn condition rated 63% good to excellent. 94% of the soybean crop has started setting pods, 18 days behind last year and nearly 2 weeks behind average. 15% of the crop has begun coloring, 12 days behind last year and 9 days behind average. Soybean condition rated 61% good to excellent. For the USDA NASS Upper Midwest Regional Field Office, this is Brad Medlock.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Cool weather continued across the prairie state last week, and rainfall was below normal as well. Temperatures range from slightly above normal to 3 degrees below normal, and the average around the state was 68.8 degrees, and that is 1.8 degrees below normal for this time of year. Rainfall averaged nearly 1/2 inch, which is slightly below normal. There was an average of 5.6 days suitable for field work last week, and topsoil moisture levels were reported as 10% very short, 22 short, 65 adequate, and 3% surplus, which is a little drier than 1 week ago. Growing degree days accumulated since May 1 are above average in southern parts of Illinois, but below normal in central and northern areas. Corn has reached the dough stage on 88% of acres. That compares to 100% 1 year ago and 99% for the 5-year average. Corn in the dense stage reached 53% compared to the 5-year average of 87. 8% of corn acres are now mature compared to 35 normally. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was rated as 21% very poor to poor, 41% fair, and 38% good to excellent, which is a little worse than 1 week ago. The Illinois soybean crop is now setting pods on 90% of acres compared to 100 last year and 99 normally. 3% of soybean acres are turning color compared to 46% normally. The condition of the Illinois soybean crop was reported as 19% very poor to poor, 40 fair, and 41% good to excellent, a little worse than 1 week ago. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is 82% finished compared to 91 normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office with weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending September 8, 2019. Continued cooler than normal temperatures across Minnesota have slowed crop development during the week. There were 4.7 days suitable for field work, and small grain harvest continued this week, but was slowed by scattered rains. Reports in and around central Minnesota indicated a prevalence of white mold in soybean fields. Topsoil moisture condition was rated 0% very short, 10% short, 82% adequate, and 8% surplus. 90% of the corn crop has reached the dough stage, that's falling to 14 days behind last year and 11 days behind the 5-year average. Corn dented was 42%, that's 2 weeks behind last year and 12 days behind normal. Corn harvested for silage reached 5% this week, that's 10 days behind normal. And the corn condition was rated 55% good to excellent, that's unchanged from the previous week. 21% of soybeans were turning color, that's 11 days behind last year and 8 days behind average. Reports of some soybeans starting to drop leaves were received this week. Soybean condition rated 59% good to excellent, a slight improvement from the previous week. Spring wheat harvested reached 78%, that's 9 days behind average. 94% of oats have been harvested, that's 3 days behind normal, and 97% of the barley crop has been harvested. Finally, pasture condition rated 62% good to excellent, declining from the previous week. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about what's happening?
Over the next week to 10 days, there'll be some opposites with the weather across portions of the United States. First of all, across the northern and northwestern Corn Belt, some cool, wet weather will be developing over the next 7 days. This will be especially true across the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, portions of central and northern Illinois. There's going to be a couple of cold fronts coming through, bringing shower and thunderstorm activity, and some temperatures are going to be downright cool. Now, we're not expecting any freezing temperatures, but temperatures will go below normal in the northern plains. There will be the first significant snows in the northern Rockies of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and maybe even Colorado this week. So the first real taste of fall across those northern and northwest Corn Belt areas, there could be anywhere from 1/2 inch to upwards to over 2 inches of rain, especially in those northwest Corn Belt areas of the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and portions of Iowa between now and early next week. The other area of concern is going to be the southeastern United States. It's going to remain very warm from Texas through the Gulf Coast to the southeast, and the far southern and eastern areas of the Corn Belt look to be warmer and drier. So there's a big contrast between the southern and eastern Corn Belt and the northwestern Corn Belt. It'll be warmer in Indiana, Ohio, and southern Illinois, and drier. Then points to the north and west will be wetter.
Hey, thanks, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's a Tuesday afternoon. That's when we always take a look at the agricultural energy sector. We're now joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago. Hey, Stephen, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, let's start with the energy sector, and then we'll work our way into the agricultural side. What's top of the mind for you today?
Well, certainly the energy markets, which had been firm earlier in the session, did break back down. Some of that may have been off of the announcement that Bolton was fired by Trump last night. Certainly probably leads to some people to expect some of the high level of tension between the U.S. and Iran will potentially ease, with Pompeo possibly taking the lead there in terms of trying to get negotiations possibly back on track. Bolton's certainly a hardliner with respect to Iran and other Mideast negotiations. Certainly his removal probably lays open the potential for at least negotiations to possibly proceed there. Whether it leads to anything fruitful remains to be seen, but that did lead to some pressure on the market here back toward unchanged levels. But we had seen some real strength in this market here the last couple of days. That coming on the heels of some of the Saudi announcements that they had appointed a new oil minister to replace Faleh. The new minister is actually a royal and the brother of MBS here in terms of setting out Saudi oil policy. I believe he's been around in the oil ministry for years and has been very instrumental in bringing in and negotiating with non-OPEC producers such as Russia to support some of the production cutbacks that we've seen recently. The belief is that he will continue to pursue a policy of production restraint on the part of Saudi Arabia and subsequently help underpin prices. Certainly, he has a tough job. There's a lot of trade-offs there in terms of high prices taking away market share, as we've seen here recently in terms of the U.S. taking markets away from Saudi Arabia here due to the expansion in our shale production, which in fact was in response to the high prices that had been apparent back in earlier this decade.
Yeah, can I ask you a quick question about that? Because I'm wondering how the trade takes this new minister in place, given the relationship that Saudi Arabia has developed with Russia, some other non-OPEC producing states. Clearly, if they're trying to keep production lower, they're looking to offset the move towards other energy sources rather than crude oil. Is the trade fearful, excited, but thinking about what the possibilities are, or does it not care very much?
No, certainly they do care in terms of production policy. I think Russia has pretty much committed themselves to somewhat of an expansionist policy, but one trying to support some of the efforts by OPEC to underpin prices to a degree. They certainly are not willing to give up a lot, but certainly would like to see other producers take on the lion's share of the cutbacks, as we've seen in terms of Saudi Arabia. So they are playing a political game in the Mideast, certainly not only with the Saudis, but also even with Iran. They certainly have an interest in developing their diplomatic relations in that area that certainly could be adverse to those of the U.S. So there is games going on in terms of both Russia and even China in the area, which has certainly benefited from some of the policies of the U.S. recently.
Now turn your attention to a different policy, one here in the United States. The Trump administration has been working through some agricultural energy policies related to gasoline, the renewable fuels, and RVOs, along with the RFS, or ethanol in general. How is the ethanol industry reacting, and what are your expectations?
Well, at this juncture, it does look like we will get the mandate expanded. I think there's talk of as much as a billion gallons increase as we move into 21. And in terms of that increase, I believe it will be split between ethanol and biodiesel pretty evenly. Certainly, there's a lot of criticism about the policy in which they have granted waivers to petroleum refiners who may have been, or at least showed evidence of financial hardship. Those have expanded under the current administration. At this juncture, the question will be, I think, whether there's demand for those renewable credits, which do trade on the open market by refiners, and whether they will force the reallocation of those of that fuel to those refiners that might be still using them. That certainly is going to be a big question on how they go forward, and has been a source of concern to the biofuels industry.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking so much time with me today.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. That is Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois.